Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And not just the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian. Planning your next trip? Choice Hotels family of 22 brands has over 7,400 locations and the perfect hotel for any traveler you want to be. Like a Cambria Hotel, serving up locally inspired craft cocktails for all my folks who maybe want to meet up and talk about Mad Royals. Check into a Radisson Hotel with flexible workspaces for you strivers who listen during business travel. Or a Comfort Hotel with free hot breakfast, family-friendly pools, and big spacious rooms for the parents who listen with their kids and need a little retreat. What are you waiting for? Join Choice Privileges and start earning points toward your next stay. Find a stay for any you when you book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true.
Happy Saturday, everyone. On the show recently, we talked about King Philip's War and how it had ongoing ramifications within New England, and that includes places that we did not discuss at all in the King Philip's War episode, and that includes New Hampshire. Today, we are going to go back to our April 20th, 2015 episode on the Sham Battle and the Cohico Massacre, which happened a few years later than King Philip's War and involved refugees from that war. So here we go.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I am Tracy V. Wilson.
And I'm Holly Fry.
So last fall, I took a trip to Dover, New Hampshire, and this was mostly just to be a little personal adventure that sounded like something fun to do and a chance to look at some really amazing autumn leaves. But one of the things that led me to pick Dover specifically for my adventure was the Woodman Institute Museum. So this museum opened in 1916, and it's mostly dedicated to local and natural history, although it has other exhibits as well. One of the town's original garrisons is there. That building was built in 1675 and then moved to the Woodman Institute property later after it was donated to the museum. It's actually pretty cool because there is an entire structure built around the garrison to protect it from the elements because it's so old. There's a lot of really fascinating stuff in the Woodman Institute Museum. Natural history and taxidermy displays are really arranged and curated a lot like they were when the museum originally opened. But one of the things that really caught my eye was inside the garrison, which is full of colonial era artifacts. And on the wall was a map that traced the progression of a conflict between British colonists and the Native Americans from the area. And the docent told me the basic story of what had happened. And the part that made me think this needs to be an episode hinged on a sham battle. So today, sham basically means trick or hoax. But at the time, and maybe also regionally, I'm not quite sure, the term sham battle was used to describe a lot of different mock battles. So reenactments were sham battles, or battles that were done as part of a ritual were sham battles. So it wasn't necessarily meant to be deceptive. In this case, however, it was from a couple of different angles. So that is what we are going to talk about today. This sham led to what came to be known as the Cohico Massacre, or the Raid on Dover.
The Raid on Dover took place during one of the many times in history which Britain has been at war with France. In this case, wars were happening both in North America and in Europe concurrently, with each of the wars having a different name depending on exactly when it happened and which side the historian was on. Specifically, these were the French and Indian Wars, which in North America, were between Britain and its Native American allies on one side and France and its Native American allies on the other.
So each of the French and Indian Wars ran alongside a related conflict that was happening in Europe. And we could easily spend an entire episode outlining all of the various nuances of who is at war with whom and why. If you look at timelines of all of this, different historians group them together differently and define them differently, and different nations give them different names. So for the sake of simplicity, France and England were at war with one another off and on for almost 100 years, with part of the conflict focused on their territories in North America and who should control those territories. So it was part of like the greater history of Britain being at war with France. And this part had a specifically American component to it, and as far as where the theater of the war was happening.
And today's subject kind of took place in a time that it overlapped a bit with King William's War, which ran from 1689 to 1697. And it was the first of the French and Indian Wars, and in the European theater, it was the War of the Grand Alliance or the War of the League of Augsburg, along with other names that it's sometimes called. King William's War was named after King William III, also known as William of Orange, who ruled Britain and other places at the time.
I know this may sound like a soup of many different wars, and one of the things I IM'd Holly as I was working on this was that I find the progression of all of these battles on each side of the Atlantic Ocean to be very confusing.
It is because there are. It is battle soup. It really becomes that way when you try to sort it all out.
Yeah, so during King William's War, battles ranged all over what's now Nova Scotia, New Hampshire, Maine, and New York. The colonies of New Hampshire and New York already existed at this point, but Maine was founded much later, and at the time, Nova Scotia was Acadia. And yes, we have heard your many requests for an episode on the expulsion of the Acadians. We will do that at some point. I'm not sure when, but lots of people ask for that. The French also tried and failed to conquer Boston during King William's War.
But before we get into this particular event in King William's War, we're going to have to talk a little bit about where it happened. And before we jump into that, it's a little early, but let's go ahead and do a sponsor break now so that we can keep some continuity later.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit tomboyx.com.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In Season 1, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from Season 1, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
and of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So to get back to the setting of where this event happened, Dover, New Hampshire was founded in 1623 on the Cohico River. The colonists in Dover overall maintained generally good relationships with the Native American tribes in the area, which were primarily the Penacook.
And as was common with many tribes in the area, the Penacook tended to move from place to place seasonally, depending on where food was most available. And although they hunted, gathered, and fished, they did also cultivate corn, and they taught these skills to the colonists in and around Dover while trading with the colonists for tools and supplies.
There were, of course, sometimes disputes. And to be quite clear, nearly half of the Penacook had died of disease after the arrival of Europeans and the Americans. But in general, at this point in history, the Penacook tried to maintain positive diplomatic relations with their neighbors from Europe, while also defending themselves from the Mohawk, which had been their enemies for quite a long time. Penacook chief Passaconaway formed a confederation among other neighboring tribes to this end of having positive relations with the colonists from Europe, as well as defending themselves from the Mohawk. His son, Wanalancet, also maintained this confederation and the ties to the colony at Dover after he succeeded his father as becoming the chief.
The first industry in Dover came via a sawmill, which was founded by Richard Waldron in 1642. And depending on what records you're looking at, you're going to see different spellings. Sometimes it comes up as Waldern, D-E-R-N-E, or Waldrin, D-R-Y-N-E, in the various records. But by 1664, more than 40 families had settled near the sawmill. Today, that's actually downtown Dover. But at this point, people called it Cohico after the sawmill. Waldron himself was put in command of the militia and given the rank of major.
The colonists in the Dover area also constructed garrisons that could be used for both defense of the town and to shelter people in case there was an attack. So families would gather up their food and their bedding, and they would go to the garrison, which could be defended thanks to being constructed out of immensely thick logs. I mean, they are enormous. Having stood in one of these things, they are almost incomprehensibly huge logs. And there would be little slits in them for firearms to be able to shoot through. And the protection of the garrison was not just for the European colonists. Native peoples in the area also frequently asked for and were granted shelter in the garrisons for the night.
The population in this area really increased significantly in 1676 when Native Americans from Massachusetts fled to Dover and other settlements in the wake of King Philip's War.
So, in spite of the similarity in the name to King William's War, King Philip's War was not one of the French and Indian Wars. In the early 1600s, colonists in what's now Massachusetts had gradually become independent from needing Native American help for their own survival. And as the colonists began moving farther and farther into territory that Native peoples were already living on, the tribes started to resist this encroachment. Relationships between the Native peoples and the colonists in the area pretty quickly soured.
Metacom, also known as King Philip, had become the leader of the Wampanoags after the death of his father. And in 1675, Metacom led most of the Native American tribes in the area in an uprising against the British. It went on for more than a year. The Native peoples were generally holding their own in these battles, or even winning, until the spring of 1676, when they faced starvation due to the destruction of their crops. The uprising also lost its leader when Metacom was beheaded. King Philip's War ended not long after.
This was an extremely bloody, extremely destructive war, especially considering the population of the area at the time. It wound up killing almost 3,000 of the Native people and 600 Europeans, and it destroyed settlements all over the New England frontier. The area around Dover had been less affected, largely because the Penacook had retreated to more remote areas to try to avoid the fighting.
And in the wake of King Philip's War, Native American refugees fled both north and west. About 400 wound up at the Cohico settlement at Dover.
So that's where we get to the sham battle that led me to want to do this episode. It's 1676, so King William's War has not started yet. That's going to play a part in the next chapter of this. The area around Dover, New Hampshire, at this point is home to a sawmill, some garrisons, fewer than 50 families of colonists from Europe, its own local Native American population, and also about 400 Native American refugees who had fled the terror and destruction of King Philip's War. And we will go on to talk about how this turned into a problem after another brief word from a sponsor.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X, celebrating pride and the queer community all year. Queer founded, queer run, and the makers of the original boxer briefs for women, creating sustainable size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies so you feel comfortable in your own skin. Tomboy X just dropped their Pride 24 collection, obsessively fit tested for all day comfort in sizes 3 extra small through 6X. Visit TomboyX.com.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, because the Native American refugees in Dover had fled from around Boston, Boston actually sent 2 companies of soldiers to capture them and bring them back by force.
Now, Major Waldron thought it might be possible to make this problem go away without bloodshed. He did think that the Boston area Native Americans should be returned back to Boston, but he didn't want the Native peoples from around Dover to be harmed. I mean, after all, especially from the colonists' point of view, relationships with the Pinnacook had been pretty good. They didn't really want to mess that up. There was a productive trade relationship going on. There was cooperation between the peoples and not overall a lot of fighting at that point.
So he proposed that they have a sham battle. He would arm the Native Americans with muskets and they would have a mock fight against the Dover militia to make a good show for the Boston troops. The Boston troops would see this battle, be satisfied that things were being taken care of, and go back home. Waldron reportedly armed them, although with only enough for the armed men to fire one single shot and not reload.
So the part about putting on a good show for the Boston troops and making them go away seems to have been how he sold the refugees on this whole plan. But here's what he did not tell them. He had actually arranged for the Dover area militia to be present, and once the Native fighters had all fired their one shot from their muskets, surround them and weed out the ones who were from Dover from the ones who were from Boston, and then send the Boston group back with the Massachusetts soldiers.
The Massachusetts soldiers took more than 200 Native Americans back to Boston, where some of them were executed and others were sold into slavery.
So this whole sham battle had done what it was supposed to do from Waldron's point of view. It had gotten the Boston area Native population back to Boston, and it had left the Dover Native population unharmed. However, unsurprisingly, this was not good for the relationship between the Dover colonists and the Native Americans from the area. Those productive trading relationships and diplomatic ties quickly started to crumble. Things remained tense for more than a decade, during which Dover added to its collection of garrisons. And the newer garrisons had a second floor that was larger than the first floor, which created an overhang that could be used to pour hot oil on people who were trying to set the structure on fire or break their way into it.
Each neighborhood had its own garrison, and 5 houses, those that were at the highest vantage points around Dover, were converted into garrisons at public expense and surrounded by a palisade. Some accounts actually say there were a total of 6 heavily fortified garrisons, so there's a little bit of lack of clarity around those specifics.
So Major Waldron, possibly in an effort to try to keep things under control, also started putting a number of restrictions on the Native people around Dover. He started restricting their rights to travel in the woods, and he started, quote, trading with them for land. But these trades always happened under duress, and they always worked strongly in the colonists' favor. So things were going south pretty quickly.
Eventually, Chief Wanalancet died, and he was succeeded by Conkamagus. While Wanalancet had followed his father's example in maintaining cooperative relationships with the Dover colonists, Kankamagus had no intention of doing any such thing. While his father and his grandfather had tried to maintain these diplomatic ties with colonists, he had seen one injustice after another following in the wake of the sham battle.
Also running concurrently with all of this escalation was, as we mentioned at the top of the podcast, King William's War. So things were becoming increasingly tense all over the area. Small-scale attacks against colonial homes and settlements were happening all over New England, and it was clear to the colonists at Dover that more serious hostility was imminent. People started taking refuge in the garrisons every single night.
Governor Edward Cranfield decided to enlist the aid of the Mohawk, who, remember, had long been enemies of the Penacook, for support. So Kankamagus at first moved as many of his people as he could into a more remote area to try to keep them safe. And he sent a series of letters to Governor Cranfield to try to reach some kind of agreement.
The governor apparently didn't enter into serious negotiations with Kankamagus at any point, so Kankamagus eventually started planning a more coordinated attack against the colonists in Dover.
Although Major Waldron insisted that everyone's fears were overblown, some of the Penacook who were loyal to the colonists tried to warn them that there was an incoming attack. Word made it to the governor, who wrote to Waldron warning him of a large gathering of Native Americans in the area who seemed to have hostile intentions. He sent this letter on the 27th of June, 1689.
Unfortunately, that same night before the letter reached its destination, two or three Native American women asked for shelter at the garrisons around Dover and were allowed in at all but one of them. While everyone was asleep, these women unbarred the doors and opened the gates so that the warriors who were waiting outside could come in.
At Major Waldron's garrison, the major himself was tied to a chair and slashed with his own sword, with his attacker reportedly saying, quote, "I cross out my account." He was dismembered and killed, and his family was killed or taken captive before his house was burned down.
Similar scenes played out at Dover's other garrisons as the colonists within were killed and captured before the garrison itself was set on fire. Some of the garrisons were ultimately left standing, but their contents were looted and their inhabitants killed or captured before the raiders moved on.
The only garrison that was left untouched was one where a barking dog had alerted the family who were there. Most of them were actually away, and someone who was there had woken up, closed the gate, and mounted a defense.
23 people were killed and 29 were taken captive, and this was about a quarter of Dover's population. Some of the captives were reportedly also sold into slavery, as had happened after the sham battle.
Kankamagus and the Penacook retreated quickly before the militia could be raised or before any kind of real resistance could be mounted. And Kankamagus eventually relocated the Penacook and then joined his people with the Abenaki people, which was a closely related tribe that was native to the area.
Many of Kankamagus's family was killed or captured in a raid later on by Captain Benjamin Church that took place in 1690. He and the Penacook continued to attack other settlements in the area after the raid on Kahiko, and this stopped only when he learned that the British were holding his surviving family members hostage.
Because such a large proportion of the population of Dover had been lost, it took quite a while for the town to recover. It continued to be the target of similar attacks and raids, but there was never anything on the scale of this massacre.
When you look into information about the Penacook and the Abenaki today, a lot of times they're written about as one tribe or as like different parts of the same tribe or the same people. So there are still members of those tribes who are alive today. They're not a group that has disappeared. So that is what I learned when I delved more deeply into something that I had heard the very brief museum docent version of while on a weekend trip.
Museums are very inspiring places.
They are. I tend, even when I am deliberately like, okay, I am on vacation and I am not going to think about the podcast, because we like to work on the podcast, but it is still our jobs. It is work. And sometimes we need a break from work. So even when I am conscientiously like, I am at this museum for myself and my own edification, I still wind up writing down things to do episodes about later on.
Me too.
Thank you so much for joining us today for this Saturday Classic. If you have heard any kind of email address or maybe a Facebook URL during the course of the episode, that might be obsolete. It might be doubly obsolete because we have changed our email address again. You can now reach us at historypodcast@iheartradio.com, and we're all over social media at Missed in History. And you can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the iHeartRadio app, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. Stuff You Missed in History Class is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Happy Pride from Tomboy X. We just dropped our Pride 24 collection. Queer founded, queer run, and creating size and gender inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. So you feel comfortable in your own skin. Visit TomboyX.com to shop.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.